Can you believe the Masters is actually upon us, getting started tomorrow? I honestly, I mean, when this is one of the events that obviously happening in April is one of the first ones to kind of get cut off this year, not knowing if we were going to have it. Then, of course, it gets announced. It's going to be in November, and it kind of feels like everything. We got to look forward to it. We got to look forward to it all throughout quarantine. I kept thinking, as sports keep coming back, my gosh, we still have the Masters to look forward to. And here we are on the eve of a fall Masters tournament. That should be an interesting show to watch throughout this weekend. But we will talk about the Masters a little later on in the show. Also talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo's future, possibly with Milwaukee. Where could he go in the NBA? Also take a little bit more of a in-depth look at some of the MLS contenders as the MLS Cup playoff field has been set. And we'll get into some of the Formula One calendar news. The provisional 2021 Formula One calendar has been released. So we'll take a look at that here momentarily. But it is Veterans Day, so just want to say a quick thank you to everybody out there. If you're listening, you've served, you have just done a lot for our country, so I want to thank you for that. Both my grandfathers served in wars. My mom's dad served in World War II. Lied about his age, actually, to get into World War II. Was 16, said he was 18, was able to get into the Army, fought in World War II. Then my dad's dad fought in Vietnam as well. So very, it's oddly almost kind of a peaceful day, Veterans Day, thinking about everyone that served and what it's meant, and that because of that we're able to have these freedoms. I'm able to sit here and talk about sports for a living, and I really couldn't have imagined that a couple years ago, but here I am, thinking that I've been very lucky to be in the position that I'm in and have the opportunities I've had. So thank you to everyone out there, all the men and women that have served and are serving and are in training to serve. I just want to send a very big thank you out to everybody on this Veterans Day. But now let's get into a little news about Formula One, because we do have the provisional calendar for the 2021 season, and it's a beauty, you guys. It's just awesome. They are going for their longest calendar to date, 23 races on the calendar, starting March 21st, ending December 5th. However, currently the fourth round of the season has been vacated by Vietnam, and we'll get into that. But here are some of the, just in case you've missed out on some past conversations, here are some of the expansion and calendar changes coming into 2021. So, of course, the Dutch Grand Prix, like many Grand Prix this season, were supposed to be on the calendar, were not due to COVID. So the Dutch Grand Prix is now due to be revived this coming season in 2021. Scheduled to take place at the Circuit Zandvoort. And, of course, it'll mark the first time the Dutch Grand Prix has been run in the Formula One Championship since 1985. And I'm really excited to see this track in real life. I've driven on it in the Formula One video game, the 2020 video game, and the angles that are through some of these curves, it looks, I mean, in the video game, it just seemed to almost defy logic to be able to have a car go on some of these banked curves. So I'm excited. I was excited to see what that race was going to look like this year. Didn't get a chance to see that. So I'm hoping and praying. I think now that obviously they have their regulations, they have their setups in place. So even if there is, and I imagine there will be, some COVID obviously roll over to next year, these races should still happen on time now that obviously, they've conducted this schedule in a pandemic year, so they'll know how to set up these races, what to, the different type of fan limitations to each event and all that stuff going into the season. So I imagine it will be contested next year, which I cannot wait for. And then talked about it a little bit last week. The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix has been added to the provisional schedule. It is due to make its debut. It'll be a night race held on a temporary street circuit in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And it's actually scheduled to be the penultimate round of the season. It's currently round 22 on November 28th. And the only race after that is the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix that serves as the season finale. So if we do get to a point next year where the championship, one or both championships, are still alive by the time we get to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, that's going to be a brand new circuit in a very vital part of the season. So Hopefully we do get that. We do get to Saudi Arabia next year, and one championship is at least still up for grabs. So there's a little more pressure on teams getting used to a brand new circuit with those obviously having the natural bumps and curves and dips of streets that see cars every day that have weather just beating down on them throughout the year. Although I'm not sure what kind of weather you really get in Saudi Arabia. But nonetheless, street circuits are very tricky and can be very difficult to get a handle on. So having a brand new street circuit at night, no less, so qualifying and the race will be at night, and to have that as the penultimate round of the season could really spice things up towards the end of next year. So we'll just have to hope that at least one world championship is still up for grabs by the time we get there. But that is set to make its debut next season, and of course further plans to then move the race to Qiddiya, Saudi Arabia, has been talked about for 2023. So next season and the 2022 season, I imagine they'll keep it at this street circuit in Jeddah, and the plan seems to be to move that race into Qiddiya for 2023 and however long the race is hosted in Saudi Arabia after that. But that'll be interesting to see what that street circuit looks like, and to see our third night race behind Bahrain and Singapore. Now Saudi Arabia will be the third race of the season to start and end under moonlight. So that'll be fun to see. I'm always a big fan of night races. It really gives a different feel and a different look to Formula One. So excited to see what that street circuit looks like. And then Liberty Media, who is the sport's commercial right holders, have been talking about a second race in the United States. And now that the fourth round of the season has been vacated by Vietnam, we'll get to that very soon here. But they have talked about holding a second race here in the United States. And apparently, due to some reports, there has been an agreement in principle to host that second race, and it'll be in Miami. Initially, there was a proposal for a race around downtown Miami and the Dodge Island area, but that was rejected. Then a second circuit came up that included Hard Rock Stadium there in Miami, and that was named the preferred circuit to use, and 2021 was put forward as the earliest date for the race. Now, there is no second race on the calendar as of right now, but with round four being vacated, I don't know if Formula One want to go from China to Miami, then Miami to Spain, but they do have a weekend off in between each of those rounds. It'd be rounds 3, 4, and 5. So in thought, they could have the Chinese Grand Prix, have that weekend off, get everybody to Miami, then have the United States Grand Prix, I guess maybe east. That's what they used to do. They used to have a U.S. Grand Prix West, a U.S. Grand Prix East. So maybe that's what they'll do now, having a race maybe in Miami and in Austin. But they could do that if they wanted to. If this race does go forward, if they do have a second race in the United States, there is now a round vacant, essentially, where they could put that race in and have two races in the United States. But now for the Vietnamese Grand Prix, because that was also supposed to be a race that was on the calendar this year, but of course due to COVID, it was taken off. And essentially, any street circuit or temporary street circuit was immediately taken off the calendar because it was just going to be too tricky to try to set up a street circuit in the COVID era. So initially, this was a race that was supposed to take part on a temporary street circuit there in the country's capital of Hanoi. But again, due to COVID, that race was taken off the calendar. So it was initially then on the provisional calendar for next season as the fourth round of the championship, but now that round has been vacated by Vietnam, and depending on what stories you read, I'm not going to get into certain details because, you know, some details change story to story, but essentially what it sounds like is that the race was taken off the calendar because of corruption charges of a key official. I couldn't find any kind of information on what specific official, but a key official, as stories have gone, has been arrested on a corruption charge. So because of that, they forfeited their fourth round of the championship there in Vietnam. So we'll see if they fill that round, again, with a second race in the United States, or with maybe one of the races they put on the calendar this year to fill races that they want to bring back. Because as of right now, the Eifel Grand Prix, the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, Portugal, Sakhir, Styrian, Turkey Grand Prix, and the Tuscan Grand Prix are all not on the calendar next year since they were essentially just brought in to fill rounds this season. But if that fourth round is open and you're going to go into Europe anyway in round five with Spain, they could go to, you know, the Tuscan Grand Prix game, Mugello. They could go to Portimao. I could see him possibly going back to Germany or to the Nürburgring or the Hockenheim Ring. So there are options. So, they're either going to fill that fourth round with something, or it's just going to become a 22-race championship instead of a 23-race championship. But either way, so those are some of the expansion and changes. And, of course, all the Grand Prix like Azerbaijan, Monaco, Singapore, Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, all those ones are returning. And it's nice to see them kicking off the season again in Australia. 21st of March next year is the scheduled race date for us. So really, the first day of the season, the first two practice sessions would take place on the 19th of March. That'd be the first official kind of day of sessions for Formula One of the season. But the first race goes down March 21st there at Albert Park in Melbourne, in Australia, for the Australian Grand Prix. And it was really weird for the season. I mean, ever since I started watching Formula One, the season has started in Australia. So for this season not to do that, it felt kind of weird. So it's going to be good to see him back in Australia for that race. But they'll go Australia to Bahrain to China. Then we'll see what they do with round four, if they fill that with the race or if they just go right from China then to Spain. Then you have Monaco coming back as of right now, scheduled for the 23rd of May. Then from there to Azerbaijan, to Canada, to France, to Austria, then to Britain, then to Hungary, which, of course, Hungary on the 1st of August marks the end of the first half of the season. Then they have essentially a three-and-a-half-week break before they're back in Belgium on the 29th of August for that race. Then from Belgium, they go to the Netherlands, to Italy, to Russia, to Singapore, to Japan, to the United States, to Mexico, to Brazil, then to Saudi Arabia, then Abu Dhabi, currently scheduled for the 5th of December, serves as this year's season finale as well. Abu Dhabi's become kind of the season-ending site for Formula One. And you know what? It's a beautiful facility. That Yas Marina circuit there in Abu Dhabi is really... Anytime you see it there on TV, I feel like it doesn't do it justice. I haven't been there, obviously, in person, but it seems like it's just a world of its own there. I mean, it had its own hotel right there. It's all on this nice harbor. I mean, it looks just spectacular, so I can understand why they'd want to end their season there. So Abu Dhabi, like this season, like past seasons, next season as well, will serve as the season finale. So looking for that. I mean, it looks like a really fun schedule. It was the kind of schedule we anticipated seeing this year, but obviously didn't get to. So I'm excited to see what these races really just have in store for us next year and getting to return. I mean, like some of these races weren't initially thought to be on the 2021 calendar, like Austria, like Brazil. So I'm excited to see both of those races on this calendar, especially with the Brazilian Grand Prix staying there in Sao Paulo. So looking forward to that, and really to the whole calendar. And we might really start to think about next season after this coming weekend, because chances are Lewis Hamilton is going to win his seventh Drivers' Championship. Valtteri Bottas, really the only man mathematically still able to win a championship, but what he has to do this Sunday at the Turkish Grand Prix is outscore Lewis Hamilton by at least 8 points. Don't think he's going to be able to do that. I mean, it's one thing if Bottas just finishes in front of Hamilton, period. Ever since Valtteri joined Mercedes, and I feel like there has been some Mercedes favoritism at times, so that's always played against him. But, I mean, just thinking about this season alone, very rarely has Valtteri ever finished in front of Hamilton. Valtteri has one win this season. That's it. Or maybe two. Definitely not as many as Lewis Hamilton. So if Valtteri Bottas wants to keep this fight alive going to Bahrain, he's going to have to outscore Lewis Hamilton by at least 8 points. If he outscores him by 7 or less, doesn't matter. If Lewis Hamilton finishes in front of Valtteri Bottas in any way, Lewis Hamilton wins his seventh Drivers' Championship. That would wrap up both championship fights. Obviously, Mercedes won the Constructors' Championship at the previous race there at Imola. But essentially, both championship fights would be over with three races to go in the season. That means that the Bahrain Grand Prix, the Sakhir Grand Prix on the Bahrain Outer Circuit, and Abu Dhabi is all about pride, which still makes it fun to watch. I mean, it's a bummer, obviously, when the championships are decided and there's not a whole lot still to play for. But, I mean, in terms of pride, in terms of, you know, where you finish in the standings and what that can still give you until the new regulations kick in. So it's still worth watching and it's still fun to watch. But, man, if Valtteri Bottas can find some way to outscore Hamilton by 8 points and keep this fight going to Bahrain, at least to the first race in Bahrain, that would be awesome. So we'll see, but I, you know, I'm not usually a betting man, but I wouldn't put my money on Bottas keeping this fight going into Bahrain. But that's some of the news from the Formula One calendar. Looking forward to that unfolding in front of our eyes next season for the 2021 season. But as of right now, we will focus. So we'll talk on Friday, obviously, about the Formula One race and other races going on this weekend. But looking forward to that 2021 season next year. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Major League Soccer has their playoffs set. Told you the matchups yesterday, but we'll dive a little bit more into who are true contenders and who could just be in the playoffs for a fun time. So we'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, we're still a little ways away from the MLS Cup playoffs, but I'm pumped about how this field has set itself up. I think there's a lot of exciting matchups. The two Eastern Conference play-in round games scheduled for November 20th, and that will get the playoffs underway. So the top 10 teams in the Eastern Conference making the postseason, the top six get a bye past the play-in round. Philadelphia is the number one seed in the East. Toronto as the number two seed in the East are waiting to see who they will play between the two play-in round games, featuring number 7 Nashville and number 10 Miami, the two newcomers to Major League Soccer this year to the Eastern Conference. Well, actually, Nashville's part of the Western Conference, but due to kind of how they set up the season, how they set up the schedule, they kind of shuffled some teams around to make the scheduling work. So they're in the Eastern Conference, I believe, for this just the rest of this season. The next year, they'll return back to the West. But Nashville at 7 takes on the 10th seed Miami. Inter Miami CF, and then number 8 New England takes on number 9 Montreal. So those are the two Eastern Conference play-in games scheduled for November 20th. And then you have number 3 Columbus taking on number 6 New York Red Bulls. And then the other Eastern Conference matchup is number 4 Orlando against number 5 New York City FC. So it'll be, again, a lot of fun matchups there out west. Number 1 Sporting Kansas City takes on number 8 San Jose. So fun to see a club obviously very connected and affiliated with Reno 1868 FC there. I guess I should say was very connected to them, as much as that hurts me. But good to see San Jose there in the playoffs. Number 4, Minnesota takes on number 5, Colorado. Number 3, Portland takes on number 6, FC Dallas. Then number 2, Seattle takes on the 7th seed, LAFC. So again, a lot of fun matchups for these MLS Cup playoffs. Looking forward to it. In terms of the favorites, I mean, with such a kind of wild and wacky season, I know it's going to seem a little too obvious, but really we got to look at the top 4 seeds, the top two seeds in each conference. I mean, the Philadelphia Union, again, I think a lot of these top teams have balance. The Philadelphia Union definitely has balance in terms of having numerous players that are able to contribute on offense, and then just having a solid back line as well. It's just very tough to get legit scoring chances off of the way they play defense. And this team was the Supporters' Shield winners. Now, if you remember, I mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago that the Supporters' Shield was not going to be handed out this year. They decided to not give that to the team that has the best regular season record. It seemed as though a lot of teams were giving some negative backlash on that. But the Philadelphia Union would have won the Supporters' Shield had it been handed out. So as they're on the field on decision day celebrating that, one of their team managers or teammates or somebody on the team brought up a silver Captain America type looking shield, and they held that up and celebrated with that when they really should have been celebrating with the Supporters' Shield. But unfortunately not able to do that, but they were still able to get some fun celebrations in as they were the best team in Major League Soccer. They had the best regular season record, and they walk in with essentially home field advantage throughout the playoffs, because the MLS Cup final is not like the Super Bowl where it goes to some kind of neutral site And it's predetermined before the season. You know where it's going to be. The higher-seeded team, the better-seeded team, gets to host the MLS Cup Final. So Philadelphia will get to play at home throughout this postseason, and that's huge for a team, again, that has such balance. But, you know, the thing about Philadelphia is that for all their success this season, they aren't one of the more talented side in terms of playoff history, which could leave them just open to an upset, because this one-off, you know, single game elimination type format for Major League Soccer, which I'm all for, love the single elimination. I kind of, you know, I was a fan of the two-leg system, because I appreciated both teams getting to host a game, but the away goals rule drives me insane. So I love the fact that come to a one-off single elimination game, you're tied at the end of 90 minutes, go into extra time, still tied, go to a shootout. You know, you get that drama through every round and every game. But Philadelphia, again, not having the best playoff history, you wonder if that factors into mindset or if they start to overthink something. So I think that could be a way that they just kind of leave themselves open to an upset. And you got to be careful when you only have one game. It's not like you can blow game one, then come back and try to get it back. If you open yourself up, especially if you can't recover, that's it. All that good work in the regular season down the drain. Then the other team from the Eastern Conference, Toronto FC, obviously the number two seed there. They are, again, a team with a lot of championship pedigree. They have made three of the last four MLS Cup finals. In fact, so has Seattle. And we'll talk about Seattle a little later here. But Seattle and Toronto have faced each other in three of the last four, in 2016, 17, and then last year in 2019. In 2018, it was Atlanta-Portland. So Toronto and Seattle, very familiar with making playoff runs. So they have that previous postseason experience. And again, balance. I feel like that word comes up a lot with championship contenders. The fact that Toronto, front to back, back to front, they are completely balanced this season. They have an MVP candidate as well on that team, an Alejandro Pozuelo. So with him kind of carrying that side, leading them into this postseason, Toronto, again, if they can, like Philadelphia, really continue to use that balance, they can be very, very dangerous in this postseason. But the thing is about Toronto is, you know, a little dinged up. And, I mean, they got some players close to returning to full health. But, you know, that could be a downfall for this team if they don't have guys that are, you know, healthy enough to really go out there and compete and be able to. I mean, they've been able to do that. Obviously, they have the second seed in the Eastern Conference. So they've been able to kind of fight through those injuries throughout the regular season. But, again, it's just a different mindset. You got one game. If it gets away from you, that's it. So if they're not in a good enough position with injuries, with guys feeling healthy enough to go out there and compete, it could put Toronto in a tough spot. And then anytime you go into the playoffs, it's all about who's hottest, who's on that winning streak, and the top seed in the Western Conference is on that kind of a hot streak. Sporting Kansas City is 6-1-1 in their last eight games of the season. So they are on a solid roll. Johnny Russell has been huge on the offensive end with 6 goals and 4 assists. And again, a solid back line as well there for Sporting Kansas City. The other thing is, again, though, same with Toronto. They've had some injuries this season, and the health of another big forward in Alan Pulido kind of looms large. You know, he suffered kind of an MCL sprain there before the regular season finale. So that could be a big missing piece for Sporting Kansas City as they try to make this run through the postseason. So we'll see how Toronto and Sporting KC both manage those type of injury situations as they have throughout the rest of the regular season now into the one-off playoffs here, the one-game playoffs. Then the other top seed there in the Western Conference, the number two seed, Seattle Sounders. Again, this is a team with a lot of MLS experience, MLS Cup experience, having won two of those three matches against Toronto. Seattle won it in a shootout in 2006 and then won it last year 3-1 over Toronto at home at CenturyLink Field. So again, Seattle has that same kind of experience with Toronto in terms of getting to the championship, but they've won two out of those three meetings, and obviously two of the last four. So Seattle knows what it's like to play in these type of pressure situations. And again, being at home for most of the postseason, unless they have to go on the road to play Sporting Kansas City, or if they have to play one of the top seeds from the Eastern Conference to go on the road there as well. Otherwise, Seattle's going to be at home, and even without really a crowd there, it's still a tough place to go up and win, especially in cold weather, and especially with the pressure of the playoffs on you. And this is a Seattle team that knows how to do that. So as much as it kind of seems obvious or kind of the easy way to go, I feel like the top two seeds in each conference definitely look like the favorites after the seasons they've had and the end of the seasons that they've had. And then in terms of teams that have a shot, maybe not, you know, not considered favorites, but teams I don't think would be overly surprising if they figured out how to win a championship. The Portland Timbers, the 3 seed there in the Western Conference. Again, this has just been a stellar attacking side. Defense, not so great this year, but they have just incredible forwards that can put pressure on back lines. They can get great angles and great shots on goalkeepers. So Portland, definitely a team that if they can just get some I mean, not even great defensive performances, just some consistent defensive performances in this postseason, Portland could definitely be a threat. Orlando City taking part in their first postseason. Again, a team that has a lot of experience, but this is their first playoffs. And so, again, you wonder how players or managers can maybe overthink things or maybe kind of feed into that pressure a little bit more than they would if they had some postseason experience. I mean, you got guys on this team like Nani, the Portugal star, who's been in big World Cup situations and UEFA Euro situations. So there are guys on this team that knows what it's like to be in you know, high-stakes games. But every league, every tournament's different. So you just wonder if, you know, as they settle into what the MLS playoff pressure, if they don't overthink things here and there and open themselves up. Because Orlando City taking on New York City FC, that's not a bowl-over type of team that Orlando City doesn't have to worry about. So if they feed a little too much into that pressure, they could be knocked out of the playoffs pretty early. And then the Columbus Crew, the 3rd seed there in the Eastern Conference. Again, just loads and loads of talent on this team. A great goalkeeper as well, Eloy Room, who has looked really, really sharp here at the end of the season. Again, it just hasn't, in terms of this team, it's not so much injuries or having kind of a bad defense or not a good offense. It's just in terms of rhythm. Columbus this season has seemed like a really rhythmic team. If they're out there, they're moving the ball well, they're kind of moving at the speed and pace they want to move at, they seem to be a team that is really, really hard to stop. But if you disrupt them, if you want them, you know, if you get them playing a pace they don't want to play, they can't really kind of roll with it. So if they can get kept out of their rhythm, if they're made to play someone else's game, Columbus is in trouble. But there is so much talent that if they dictate the match, Columbus is going to be a deadly, deadly team to face in this postseason. And then LAFC, I think even as the 7th seed, that's a little misleading for this team because, again, you talk about offensive firepower. I mean, Diego Rossi, Bradley Wright Phillips, Carlos Vela, who's coming back from his knee injury. So, I mean, this is an LAFC team that has so much talent and so much power offensively. So it'll be interesting to see how their offense continues to put pressure on opposing defenses. But also, again, this is a team that's kind of struggled with that back line this season. So we'll see if LAFC can get some, again, like Portland, if they can get some consistency from that back line. Doesn't even have to be great play. Just make it tough, make it difficult, give your goalkeeper a good chance, and make sure that their angles, the angles for the offensive player are just tough angles to try to get a shot off. Or if they do, you know, they really got to work for it, and it's an easy save for the keeper. So if LAFC can get that, that offense is more than capable of making any day just completely, you know, nightmarish for any goalkeeper and any back four. So we'll see what LAFC can do there. The New York City FC as well. You know, this is a team that, again, has been great down the stretch since Maxi Morales has returned to the lineup. And, again, just some really solid talent throughout this team. But again, it's just kind of some of these later games in the season, especially on decision day, there have just been some just defensive gasps, just some real major brain farts for the back line there for New York City FC. So while it hasn't been a whole season problem, definitely on decision day and then kind of throughout the final stretch of the season, there have just been some gaffes by the defense that you just can't have in the postseason. So if they can clean that up, this is a team that has talent all the way through and can absolutely make a playoff run there in the Eastern Conference. Then finally, a team that I wouldn't be super surprised if they managed to find a way to win a championship is Minnesota United. Again, a team that has a really dangerous attacking trio of players there with Emmanuel Reynoso, Kevin Molino, and Robin Lode. So I think all three of those guys, as dangerous as they are, they can just put pressure on teams and constantly make you have to mark guys, make sure you know where everybody is, because if you lose track for just a second, they'll make you pay for it. And Minnesota, being that fourth seed, being able to be at home for that first game, I think could be really important for them. So those are the teams, in my opinion, to watch. Can't wait to see the Major League Soccer playoffs kick off on November 20th. Should be a lot of fun, just 9 days from now. Hopefully those go by quickly and we can get into some fun playoff soccer here in the United States. I'm looking forward to that. When we come back, I'm also looking forward to the Masters, and we have arrived at the 2020 Masters competitions. We will take a look at that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Who's ready for fall Masters? 19 months after Tiger Woods won it in 2019 at 13 under, we are getting ready for the Masters once again in 2020. And a lot of questions around this tournament, like expectations from Tiger. Obviously, no one really thought he was going to win it last year when he did. Could he win it this year? Could he tie Jack Nicklaus for 6 Masters tournament champions? Right now, he's at 5. And if he shocks the world again, he'll match Jack Nicklaus with 6. And, you know, I feel like Tiger Woods, really for the last, I mean, since he started making his comeback into golf, it's just been a coin toss. I mean, obviously, it feels like it's gotten more consistent now than it was when he first started coming back into golf. But still, I wouldn't be shocked if he won it. I wouldn't be shocked if he missed the cut and wasn't playing on the weekend. I mean, you just don't know what you're going to get from Tiger. And as much as it was kind of cool to see that comeback last year and see him win, I mean, a 13 under, one of the, you know, better performances that we've seen the last 5 or so years. But you just don't know what to expect from him. So I think it's always intriguing to see him out there on the course, see what he can do. And coming into this as the defending champion, you know, I think a lot of the times you look at those competitors as they come in and you really expect them to put up a fight and be there on Sunday and you know, be battling to defend their championship. But again, with Tiger Woods, it just kind of seems like this is a defending champion with no real pressure coming in. It's not like he's coming off 3 or 4 victories and everyone's going around like, oh my gosh, is this going to be another championship for Tiger? It just hasn't been that kind of lead up. So as a defending champion, this sense coming into this event, I feel like there's just not a whole lot of pressure on him to really go out there and try to match that performance from last year. If he does, again, it'll kind of be that same shock and surprise type of reaction where everyone, I think, for the most part, is just intrigued and thrilled to see it. But we'll see. We'll see if Tiger Woods can win his 6th. We'll see if maybe 2018 champion Patrick Reed is around again as well, competing there on Sunday. Now, those are the last 2 champions to win it. Patrick Reed in 18, Tiger Woods last year. Of course, Sergio Garcia won in 2017 as well. Those are the last 3 champions at the Masters. So it'll be interesting to see what Tiger can produce from such a talented field, yet a smaller field than what we've seen. But obviously a lot of people are also looking at a favorite to win this tournament in Bryson DeChambeau, coming off what was just a ridiculous driving performance there at the U.S. Open. It was just ridiculous. And so what he was able to do off that tee, I think everyone's waiting to see what he's going to do off the tees at the Masters. The thing is, it's not necessarily a course where tee shots are king. You got to have a good second shot as well. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. I mean, obviously, if he can continue to drive like he has been, he's going to put himself in good situations for a second shot. But, I mean, I think all eyes are going to be on him in that tee box. How could it not be? After some of the drives he was crushing earlier this year, I mean, almost to Happy Gilmore levels, where people are putting their hands over their eyes, trying to block the sun as they follow this ball, as it just becomes, a pea off in the distance before you just lose track of it. I mean, he's just obliterating these golf balls. So it'll be interesting to see how those drives, those monster drives, because I think he changed his driver too. I think there was a report that he went to the longest driver you're allowed to have there. So he's going to get all the torque he possibly can to smash these golf balls down the fairway there at Augusta National. So really can't wait to see how he sets himself up, how he plays those second shots, and I mean, especially on par fives. That's the thing. When you have somebody that can just crush it 400, I mean, just god-awful yards, number of yards. I mean that in a good way, but just, it blows your mind how far he can drive it. So when he gets on par fives and he chips it on the green for a second shot, it blows your mind. So I really can't wait to see what he can do on the par fives, but all around, it's going to be a fun time watching DeChambeau just destroy golf balls there at Augusta National. And then in terms of, again, no fans. No fans at this Masters tournament. They were talking about possibly no fans at next year's Masters as well, because even though this Masters tournament was postponed until November, next year's Masters, right back in its normal slot. So Fall Masters, no fans, much different atmosphere, and it's going to be interesting to see players who have never won a major or have won a major with no spectators, and they're used to that, and they get back into that kind of mode of just being zoned in that silence. But again, to have majors with no fans there, I mean, as a spectator, it seems weird. I can't imagine having to adjust to that as a competitor. But some of these guys that kind of, I don't want to say crumble under the pressure, but have a hard time dealing with the pressure at a major with all those eyes on you, it could relax some guys. It could give them a better chance at winning this tournament this year, or at least making the field, the final Sunday battle a little more interesting. So that's always, I think, an interesting part to this, to any season, really, in 2020. Having limited fans there or no fans there. Saw it at the U.S. Open how kind of eerie that was with no fans, especially with the fog early on in the day, how kind of eerie it was not having fans there. So seeing Augusta National now in the fall with no fans could be that same kind of eerie feeling. But we'll see. I think it'll definitely be interesting to see how it affects some of these guys that, again, are maybe not as good at performing in the pressure of a majors with all those fans on them, or guys that have gotten so used to not having fans there, if they can then raise their game to another level at the Masters and put on a fun show. Well, this is the first ever Fall Masters, so I think it'll be interesting just to see how players approach it, how they go through the weekend, how they maybe change their strategy from Thursday and Friday to Saturday and Sunday. And I think just the talk around the green is going to be interesting. Or just talk around the club is going to be interesting as this tournament goes through the weekend, and just see how the talk evolves, how the play evolves, how the approaches evolve, and how that all changes in this very different environment for the Masters. So that's what I'm kind of looking forward to the most about the fall, is just how, or this version, this fall version of the Masters, is just how play maybe changes. Because I feel like Thursday is going to be a major learning day for a lot of these guys. Just understand how different the course is, how different it feels, how different the ball runs on the green and in fall conditions. And I feel like Friday and Saturday, again, going to be the days where they adjust to that, guys that make the cut, get into Saturday, make more adjustments. Then Sunday could be just a spectacle out there. So looking forward to that. And then again, fewer players in this Masters than we've seen. So I think that opens the door up to maybe not having as many favorites or as heavy of favorites with such a kind of smaller field of competition this year. But I think it's still going to be fun, still going to be exciting. It's the Masters. How can you not look forward to it? How can you not enjoy it? So, again, that gets started tomorrow, goes through the weekend, and just can't wait for that to get going tomorrow morning. I mean, I'll be able to come on the air with it going on. So I'm looking forward to that. But when we come back, we'll wrap up the show taking a look at Giannis Antetokounmpo's possible future landing spots. If he doesn't go back to Milwaukee, where could he go? What could happen? We'll take a look at that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Where's Giannis playing? That's an intriguing question. Because on a day where news has come out that Harden and Russell Westbrook don't have a whole lot of confidence in the direction of the Houston Rockets, there just seems to be... it seems like the NBA is having more and more turnover in terms of players moving teams and jumping teams than I've seen before as a fan, that I can remember as a fan from season to season. But with that news of Russell Westbrook and James Harden not having faith and, you know, not trusting totally where the Houston Rockets as an organization are going, there just seems to be so many questions out there. And one big one is, what's going to happen with Giannis? Because this is a man that has come into his own there with Milwaukee. He's become an MVP. He's become a star in the league. And he could sign a Supermax deal there with Milwaukee. I wouldn't be totally surprised by that, although the more I watched Milwaukee coming down the stretch, the more I watched him in the postseason, this past season, yeah, I almost started to get a feeling from Milwaukee like almost kind of like the Cavaliers when LeBron first arrived. It's a team that's got some talent, but LeBron James made that team. If I look at Milwaukee, yeah, there's guys that have talent, Chris Middleton, Drew Bledsoe. There's a lot of guys on that team that have talent, but without Giannis there, I mean, I know they still had success without him on the floor at times, but it just seems like the dimension that he gives them makes them the better team. I mean, obviously, you know, any star player would do that. They'd make a team better. But in terms of supporting cast and supporting roles, guys didn't step up, I think, as much as they could have or maybe should have this postseason for Milwaukee. So you wonder if postseason struggles for the Bucks is going to be a major part in Giannis choosing kind of what he does and where he might play. And teams that I've seen come up outside of Milwaukee are Miami, Dallas, Toronto, and a few others, but those are the three that are really starting to at least in what I've seen, kind of gain some traction. And I think all three of those are extremely interesting ideas for Giannis. I mean, if you start with Dallas, which to me is the one that stands out the most, just because, now obviously I don't know if they would get rid of Porzingis, if that would have to be the trade, or, you know, if something like that would happen. They're obviously not going to let go of Luka Doncic. He is the primary piece for that team's future in their eyes right now. So he's not going anywhere. If they can figure out some way to keep Luka, Kristaps, and then have Giannis, that would be the perfect scenario. But I just don't think that's the way it's going to go down. So would you rather have Luka and Kristaps Porzingis or Luka and Giannis Antetokounmpo? I mean, it might seem like an easy decision to some, but both of those big men are athletic. They can hit outside shots. They can be defensive presences. So I feel like it's just a matter of what you think might be a little more of a comfort setting for Luka Doncic. I think he'd be more comfortable with Kristaps, more comfortable with Giannis if he had the time to settle in there. And it's an intriguing option. I think Giannis is a little bit better than Kristaps Porzingis, not by a lot, but I think just the overall kind of athletic ability there, I think Giannis edges him out a little bit. So I think it could maybe benefit Dallas to have that Luka Giannis type of connection there in their backcourt, or really not their backcourt, but have that connection on the court and have that kind of inside game between those two. But also, you look at Miami with the run Miami made this year. If they can keep Bam Adebayo, they keep Goran Dragic, they have Tyler Hero there, they have Jimmy Butler, you put Giannis onto that team, that's a dangerous team. If they can find a way to maybe keep Jay Crowder around, have him coming off the bench, I mean, that's an even more dangerous Miami team, and they earned some major confidence this postseason. I mean, Jimmy Butler's always had confidence in himself, but Tyler Hero, I feel like, got a whole bunch of confidence this season, as did Goran Dragic, as did a lot of these guys. So this Miami team can find a way to keep those pieces like Goran Dragic, Bam Adebayo, like Jay Crowder, they can figure out how to keep those guys and bring Giannis in. That would be a scary team to face out East. But another team in the Eastern Conference that's gotten some traction is Toronto. And again, if they can re-sign Fred VanVleet, they can keep Serge Ibaka. There's a good chance that if you add Giannis onto that team again, it creates some interesting on court possibly, especially with Kyle Lowry out there. I mean, that Toronto team has some talent. Again, you know, they were a contender there in the Eastern Conference. So you bring Giannis onto that team, and it changed the dynamic on that completely, and they would, again, be a tough team to face out East. So a lot of intriguing options, a lot of interesting pieces to figure out and sort out, especially between all three of those teams as they maybe pursue Giannis Antetokounmpo. But definitely going to be interesting to see where he goes. And if he does re-sign with Milwaukee and put that trust in them, commit to them on that Supermax deal, it'll be interesting to see how other pieces around that team come into play and whether they change some supporting characters, whether they look at, you know, getting some of those guys like a Drew Bledsoe or Dante DiVincenzo out of there for some other kind of fresher role players to fill in those gaps and make Milwaukee a little more multidimensional. But definitely going to be interesting to see what happens with Giannis in the offseason, where he may go and how, again, that just, I mean, with all these moves that we've had the last couple offseasons in the NBA, it feels like every offseason the landscape just changes completely. So we'll see how that happens this offseason. As well. Should be entertaining, as it usually is. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back on the air tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We'll talk, obviously, about the Masters. Give you a preview into Thursday Night Football as well. So have some fun stuff coming up on the show tomorrow. But enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Happy Veterans Day again. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.